Hello and welcome to Perfectly Paranormal, episode 45. My name's Anna Schmidt, and I'm here every week to share with you true paranormal encounters and information about devils, demons, and dark energy beings that no one else talks about. And today we're talking with Jonathan Phoenix from his Let Me Tell You a Story podcast. Jonathan is an ex-firefighter who now spends his time as a paranormal storyteller, and he will be sharing local stories from where he lives in the United States. He'll be telling of the grey man who warns of impending hurricanes, the dancing spirit lady, the pirate captain, a helpful spirit of a British soldier, and the graveyard that he will never forget. So get comfortable, and here we go, into the realm of spirits and the unseen goings-on around us. It's wonderful to have you here with us today, Jonathan.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm a writer and podcaster. I host Let Me Tell You a Story with Jonathan Phoenix. I'm the Carolina Storyteller is what I go by. I have, of course, two books already published, Through the Flames and Redcoats, which is a horror-ish novel set in Georgetown, South Carolina, where I grew up and where I had an interesting childhood with the paranormal. I don't know if you know anything about Georgetown, but it's actually on the coast, on the Atlantic coast. So during the Revolutionary War, it was held by the British. So it is probably one of the most haunted areas in the United States of America. From basically Charleston to Myrtle Beach, that entire coastline is, you can throw a rock and hit a ghost.
Sounds amazing. I bet you've got lots of stories to tell us about that area.
Oh, yes. Yes, I definitely do. We have some really famous ones that everybody hears about. We have the Gray Man, of course. I grew up in Pawleys Island. Spent about 4 years there when I was a child. The story of the Gray Man, of course, is that a sailor back in the 1800s went off to sea and left his wife and child there on Pawleys Island. He was lost at sea due to a storm. Well, a couple of weeks later, said storm was making its way to South Carolina. And one day the wife sees her lost love that she'd heard had died on a ship standing on the beach as the waves are coming in, and she goes up to him and he just doesn't look right. And he just kind of tells her to get out, go, leave, and then walks into the water and disappears. And some people think she's hysterical. Some people think she's crazy. But everybody that she talked to 2 days later, they get hit by a hurricane and their homes miraculously survived without damage. And ever since, the Gray Man has always been seen before a major storm hits Pawleys Island. And it always tells you, one, how bad the storm is going to be. And two, if you're lucky enough to find out that he's there before the storm hits, that you're going to be okay as long as you kind of take the proper precautions, because the storm is going to be bad in that area. A friend of mine's father, who right before Hurricane Hugo hit in 1989, saw the Gray Man and came and told everybody that he had seen this man walking beside Pawleys Island Pier, and he kind of walked towards the water and just vanished. And he's positive it's the Gray Man. And, you know, that pier was destroyed. But everybody he told and all of his friends and everybody who heeded the warning, their houses were perfectly fine after the storm went through.
That's amazing. It's amazing to think that he actually is still here and wanting to help people, wanting to let people know when these weather anomalies are going to happen.
Yeah, it really is. It's something that's really amazing to think about is that, you know, every time we hear about a ghost, you don't normally hear the good stories. But the Gray Man, even though he is a harbinger, or he's kind of unique in the fact that if you listen to him, you're going to make it through. Because he stands out, especially among harbingers, because you've got the Mothman and others that show up and they mean doom and gloom. But he shows up, and basically, if you see him or if you hear from someone who's seen him, you can survive the storm.
So, did you actually start having experiences from childhood that have led you on this lifetime of wanting to learn more and more about the paranormal folklore and also sharing your own experiences.
I mean, I'd heard the ghost stories.
Yep.
And, you know, when you're 10 years old, you actually start going out. I'd start going camping with the friends, and we'd tell ghost stories around the campfire. And I moved into downtown Georgetown in the historic district. And I remember hearing about all these old houses. These houses are 200-300 years old. And there were stories of, well, in this house, such and such happened. And in this house, such and such happened. And now when there's a light on in the attic, even though there's no electricity up there every night, because she's signaling her pirate lover that's out to sea. And you can hear the man falling down the stairs because he fell down to his death. And you heard all of these stories. It was what I was surrounded by from the age of 10 until I was in my 20s. I grew up in it, constantly surrounded by it. Just to give you another story, where my house was in Georgetown, it was on Prince Street. And directly behind that, of course, is Front Street, which is the waterfront of Georgetown, where the harbor is. And back in, you know, the 1800s, ships just kind of sailed right up there and port and right into port. So there is a house that is right behind where my house was. It was owned at the time by the governor of the state of South Carolina. And his wife was the daughter of the second vice president of the United States of America, Aaron Burr, Theodosia Burr. And after Aaron was vice president, he got into some bad run-ins. There was an issue where he was considered a traitor at one point in time. The War of 1812 happens. We've got everything going on. And finally, Aaron gets back in the good graces of the United States, and he asks his daughter to come and see him in New York. She goes to the house on Front Street, which was right behind the house I grew up in, and spends her last night in Georgetown dancing at this house. And the next morning, she boards a ship known as the Patriot with her doctors and a couple of handmaidens. The reason her doctor was going is because she had told her husband that she had a bad feeling that she did not have long left in the world. And it was also why she wanted to see her father so badly, because she wanted to see him before she thought she was going to die. The Patriot sailed out of Georgetown, South Carolina, and was never seen again.
Wow, that's pretty amazing that she had that premonition.
Yes. And now here's the spooky part, is that ever since, people say when they visit the house, they can hear her. They've seen her dancing in the ballroom in the house. They've seen her coming down the stairs. And they can hear her playing with her dogs outside.
So when she's dancing in the ballroom, is she dancing by herself or does she have other spirits with her?
Now, see, I've never actually seen her. I did hear the dogs because, like I said, the house was directly behind mine.
Yep.
And I always thought they had dogs.
Oh.
And it wasn't until I was much older that I found out that the person that lived there at the time I was living there was allergic to dogs and cats, so they had no animals. So I had no clue about what the dog noises were that I always heard, because it always messed with my dog.
So when you were in the house, did you feel anything? Did you sense the presence of the young lady or maybe the dogs?
These houses, and the thing with them is that either A, they all carry some of it when you get into these older houses, because they all have that feeling that there's something else there with you. You never quite feel alone.
Yeah.
I've experienced this. You go into a house and you're always like, is there somebody else in here? Because it just feels like there's somebody else in here. And of course, I was living in one of these houses. And then you'd go into a house that, you know, had been recently built in the area, and that feeling wasn't there. And sometimes when you got used to it, it actually felt empty, like something was missing. I actually had to get used to being in places where that feeling wasn't.
So you've spent a lot of time, you're like me, you spend a lot of time around spirits, probably around some of the heavier energies that can be in homes. We just get used to them being there. And like you said, it feels really strange or odd when they're not there.
You know, getting into areas where it wasn't heavy, where you didn't, you're trying to figure out what it was, you couldn't put your finger on it. And eventually you go, is this what not haunted feels like? Wow. Well, now I have a difference to compare it to, because even my best friend, the house that he stayed in, he lived in this house that was supposedly owned by a pirate captain, supposedly somewhere on his property. Treasure is buried somewhere. We never found it. At night, we would sleep in his room, and he had this rocking chair in the corner of his bedroom. And you would sometimes see what looked like someone sitting in the rocking chair at night. And he was protector of the house. He protected whoever was in the house. Never caused any problems, but you'd see him sometimes just sitting there in the rocking chair. It was like a almost invisible shadowy figure you couldn't make out, but you know, it had the full pirate hat shape. It was the weirdest thing to see when you're 12 years old and you open your eye and you're looking over and chair's moving and weird shadow there and you're smacking your best friend. It's like, oh yeah, he's here all the time. We don't know what his name is, and goes back to sleep.
Yeah, that is so funny. I love it. I absolutely love it. So it'd be interesting to know what the pirate spirit's in that home. I wonder what he thinks. Why, you know, why does he think about people actually being in that property?
He's not the only one in Georgetown that did that. There is a famous story from the Revolutionary War about a soldier who was woken up in the middle of the night by a raid conducted by Francis Marion, the Swamp Fox. This soldier was staying on the fourth floor of one of these nice, you know, colonial homes. And he awoke and started rushing to try and get his belt buckled and everything. And as he was running, he caught on the railing for the stair on an uneven step, went over and fell three stories to the bottom of this grand staircase where he died. And ever since, he has basically protected that stairwell. The stairwell is very rickety. It's uneven. With it being a historic home, it's not like you can tear the stairwell out and build a new one. You kind of have to just restore what's there. But plenty of people do lose their balance, it seems, and they all say that they can feel like someone kind of catches and steadies them when they do. And it's, you know, again, a ghost that has just decided that he's going to stick around and help the living instead of, you know, torment them, which is what we normally hear.
Yeah, we do. And I'm a bit anti that. I don't do the fear campaign and the horror that comes with the paranormal, because generally we're talking spirits. They're either here because they're visiting family or they don't know they've died. But you've added another element today of spirits that are here to be helpful. They're here to keep people safe, basically. So that tells me that that young man has a very strong sense of duty, probably when he was alive, as he is now in spirit form.
Yeah, and as a child, you know, we always pictured the British soldiers as the bad guys. But when you come to think of it, you know, a soldier is a soldier. They are just doing a job. And their job is to fight for their country. And yes, he was here fighting against our country to keep our country under the control of Britain. At the same time, he was just doing a job. It doesn't mean he was a bad guy. It didn't mean he was a horrible person. He was here to do a job. He woke up in the middle of the night to go do his job because there was an emergency. And he lost his life because of poor craftsmanship on the stairs. So he stuck around for 250 some odd years, keeping other people from suffering the same fate he did. I think that kind of says something when you think about soldiers.
Yeah, it does actually. Have you ever had any, you said you went camping and you had some paranormal experiences. Do you ever go out in the middle of nowhere and explore abandoned buildings? Or have you ever had experiences in the most random sort of places that you wouldn't expect to find spirits?
Well, it wasn't a random place where I didn't expect to find spirits, but it was someplace I probably shouldn't have been.
Ooh, tell us more.
I did have a story for you. So in Georgetown, dead center of Georgetown, there is this graveyard. This graveyard has been there since the late 1600s. So this graveyard is now almost 500 years old. And when I was 13, my best friend, his cousin, his brother, me, and his dad decided that we were going to go and explore the graveyard at midnight. Now, his dad's, of course, leading us around, telling us stories about the graveyard. And there are a couple of good ones. For one, the church itself that was actually built in one location, and I believe it was actually originally built in Ireland, and then it was moved brick by brick to the United States of America and built there. It was built somewhere, and then parts of it came from different places, and the church was basically much older than the land that it sits on now. So he was telling us the story about that. It was a barracks during the Revolutionary War, and there was a mysterious fire. And the inside of the church was completely burned, but the outside stood. Nothing harmed the brick facade. It was just the pews and the wood. There's also the story of a young woman who was walking past this graveyard at night when something pulled her into the graveyard. Her scream was heard. The police were called. And when the police came, they found the groundskeeper holding her body. They shot him, but later evidence proved that he wasn't the one who killed her. And he's telling us these stories as we're traveling the graveyard. And then he points to this big mausoleum over there. And he says, oh, yeah, he's buried in that. And then he challenges us to walk through the entire graveyard by ourselves. Now, of the four of us, I was the runt. And after the other three went and didn't even make it a quarter of the way, I had a chance to be the bigger man. So I walked the whole thing. But as I was walking the whole thing, the first corner, the reason everybody left at the first corner, they all jumped fence and ran back, is because that's where that mausoleum was. So you had to walk past that mausoleum and then down all the way to the next corner and then back down towards the church. And I made it past the mausoleum. I made it to the second turn and I was making my way back to the church. When I heard something behind me, it was a shambling noise and some kind of almost like a growling moaning. And I looked back and I could see this form of a man, very large, broad shoulders, just kind of walking towards me, pointing at me like he was yelling at me or something. And I assumed they were trying to punk me because I was showing them up. So I continued walking and I got mad. So whereas everybody else who would have thought, you know, maybe this isn't them trying to punk me, I'm going to run and hide, I turned around and screamed at it, basically roaring, and then just continued walking. And I walked the entire graveyard around to the backside of the church and was coming back to the gate. And my friend's dad came running up to me and grabbed me by the shoulders. And he was like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And I was like, no, y'all thought y'all were funny. Couldn't stop me. And he's like, that wasn't us. And so we went outside and sat across the street. And they're all, no, John, that wasn't us. We don't know what's in. That wasn't us. Like, you were in danger. You should have ran. Why didn't you run? And I'm like, that was you. You were trying to make a joke on me. And so I said, well, if it's not you, I'm going to go back in there and look. And I go to cross the street, and to this day, I remember the sound, because when I set foot in front of that gate to walk back into the graveyard, this scream erupted out of it, and everybody started running. I took a second to realize that everybody was running, and then I started running, and I ran faster than everybody else. I was in the house, up the stairs, and in the room before most of them made it back to the house. I literally, when I realized that they took off running and left me, I took off running and left all of them. They got ahead.
That's a pretty cool story. Have you ever been back to that graveyard since?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Daytime or nighttime?
Evening time. I've never been back in the middle of the night. At one point in time, there was talk that there was some kind of spirit or something that could be seen in the windows of the church. And I used to walk my Great Dane. We walked several blocks. And as I'm walking him past this churchyard, I would look up and see this thing kind of you could almost see like look like a shadow just kind of flitting through the rafters. And it almost looked like it was having fun. And I kind of thought about it. I never had any other bad feelings from the graveyard. I never had any reason. I didn't cross the street. I didn't run from it. I'd walk the dog past it all the time. Never any problems. You know, we played out in that area all the time. We'd go in during the day and do rubbings of the tombstones, especially the ones, the older the tombstones, like 1695, things like that. We'd do charcoal rubbings. But I never had a feeling of danger like I did that night when I heard that scream. But not one of us knows what that scream was.
I mean, it could have possibly been one of them, but also to the caretaker, like you were saying about the soldier being dutiful and caring for people on the stairs, makes me wonder whether the caretaker in the graveyard was simply continuing to do his job, and maybe he felt that you and the other boys and the father shouldn't have been there of a nighttime, so he could have been trying to scare you away.
That's exactly the take that I've got on it. Redcoats combines all of the stories that I have about that graveyard for my book. I combined those stories and a lot of other elements. And that graveyard is actually in Redcoats, and it's a central part of Redcoats. It's part of my book because that was a moment where I could say, you know, there was no denying what happened that day.
I think some of these things are unexplainable. I mean, I've been in graveyards in the middle of the night as well, occasionally with some friends of mine, and I've had electric shocks ran up my legs. I've been poked in the back, pushed in the back. I've had something whisper in my ear, turn around, and I'm like, nope, I'm out of here. So, I mean, these are things out in the middle of nowhere. There's no electricity in the middle of a graveyard, you know. I mean, who's going to push me and poke me when my friends are sort of roaming around on the other side of the graveyard with their gadgets looking for someone to communicate with?
I've had the pokes, never the electricity. But I also, I think after the graveyard, I got kind of a sixth sense with danger, I think. My early career, before I got disabled and couldn't do it anymore, I was 20 years as a firefighter.
Yep.
So the paranormal was a backseat for the longest time because I was busy saving lives. But there were places, you know, my friends would be like, oh, we want to go check this place out, the old city jail. And, you know, I'd walk around and be like, this place is nothing. And they'd be like, hey, you want to go into that room? And just something would kind of just prick and be like, no, I'm not going in that room. You go ahead. You go right on ahead. I'm going to go this way. And my friends started to learn that if I said no, that meant that that was bad. And for some friends, that meant that they were staying away as well. And for others, that was right where they were going to go. There's a place here in Monk's Corner where I live now. It's about 10 miles outside of town. It's a place called Strawberry Chapel. And during the day, it is absolutely beautiful. This is a little chapel that has been there since the 1800s. There was a town that was planned for the area, and this was part of it. There's an abbey on the next property over where monks still live today. They raise chickens and sell eggs, and you can have your wedding there on the banks of the canal with the monks. And then this chapel is just behind it, and it's got a graveyard in it. At night, it takes on an entirely different aura. And there are several ghost stories about it at night. I won't go on the property at night. I don't know what it is. People say, oh, well, this place is haunted. But I go there and every alarm goes off.
Yeah. That's
I'm like,
interesting.
Nope, I don't know. I don't know what that is. And I don't want to know what that is.
That sounds more of the darker end of the paranormal scale to me, because quite often when people go into places who are very psychically open, their sixth sense is very tuned in, sometimes the dark and the demonic level beings can feel a little bit threatened, and they'll flicker lights, they'll set off alarms, they'll play with mobile phones, slamming doors and touching, scratching people occasionally. That's just a threat. Get upset, the poor darlings.
Interesting that you mention that it's on the darker side, because Strawberry Chapel has a darker story.
Ah, now it unfolds.
A much darker story. This was around the 1830s, before Civil War. A young girl who lived with a very prominent family was sent down to Childsbury, where Strawberry Chapel was, to live with her uncle and to attend the school that was being held there in Strawberry Chapel. And the schoolmaster was a very strict, very cruel individual. And she was a very open and free spirit who basically got everything she wanted. She wasn't mean. She wasn't bratty, but she did have slight problems with authority. Well, she decided she wanted to go outside, and he decided she couldn't, and she went outside. Now, you would think typically a punishment for that might be go sit in the chair for 5 minutes with the dunce cap on your head. No, this schoolmaster chained her to a large tombstone in the graveyard outside of the chapel, whipped her, and then left her there. Now, his intention was to leave her there for half an hour. Still not good, and she's left there through the night. In the middle of the night, whatever happened to her, she became so terrified that she actually, at 7 years old, suffered a minor stroke. And though she lived to the ripe old age of 80, she was never right after that night in the graveyard. A lot of people contribute her being able to survive that night to the fact that a slave, I hate saying that, slavery is one thing I can't stand, and it just happens to be part of the history here. A slave from a neighboring plantation had gone on his way to see his lover, who was at another plantation, and he was sneaking back. His name was Moni. And Moni came across the young girl. At first, he thought he was seeing a demon. But then he realized it was the young girl. And Moni spent the rest of the night risking his life, literally, to stay with her. And in the morning, he told people that the girl was there. And the schoolmaster realized he'd left her there and went to go set her free. And the schoolmaster was literally drummed out of town. They kicked him out of his house, gave him all of his stuff, and drummed him out of town for leaving her there overnight. But she never really recovered. And of course, Moni was actually not punished. Even though he had gone against his master's rules, his master felt that it was more important that he put his needs aside for the young girl. And Moni was actually rewarded for staying with the girl.
That was a beautiful thing that he did for her.
It really was. And the ghost story is different from the true story. What I've told you is the true story. The ghost story is that when Moni found her, he ran and told people, and the schoolmaster got there first to set her free. And apparently she had made a deal with the demon to free herself. And when they found her free, curled up kind of in a ball at the bottom of the tombstone. And the schoolmaster was smoldering as if it had been struck by lightning. People that had been in the area say they heard lightning. That's not what really happened. What really happened is that he was caught and drummed out of town. He didn't die. I like the ghost story better because it seems like there's some kind of righteous vengeance. And you don't find out that the poor girl was so horribly affected that she had to live her entire life with the effects of that night. But the ghost story doesn't tell you how a young man stayed with her, risking his own life to protect hers, because he literally, you know, back then they could have killed him for that because he was out and because he stayed with her, even though he was doing the right thing. I feel like the true story is the better version of that story because it's equally horrible. But whatever happened that night has apparently left its mark, is what I would say. I don't like that place at night. And I can't imagine that that young girl did either.
Well, it's a graveyard. Graveyards aren't happy places. You know, they're places where there's lots of despair and sadness. And of course, there are people buried there that, you know, may still be present, maybe roaming around the graveyard. You know, and that would be frightening for a child to be there of a nighttime, cold, hungry, tied, chained, you know, to a gravestone. He should have got a flogging for that. Like, seriously, you can't treat children, let alone anybody else, in that way.
It's one of the many stories from this area You know, I've told some happier stories from this area, but growing up in this part of South Carolina, there are so many stories that don't have the happiness in them. There's just so much that when you peel back the layers on it, and you're just like, oh, yeah, wow, no wonder there's a ghost there. And, you know, the thing with telling stories is now I've told you the story. Now you have the story to tell to somebody else. And that's the great thing about storytelling is that it gives everybody the opportunity to become a storyteller because they can take that story and pass it on to the next person.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, Jonathan, I want to thank you so, so much for coming on today and sharing your paranormal experiences, sharing some of the paranormal folklore from where you live. I've really enjoyed listening. Thank you so much.
Again, thank you so much for having me. It really was a pleasure. I really appreciate it. And to your listeners, thecarolinastoryteller.com is the website, blog. My books are available there. Got some merch going up. And of course, you can catch all episodes of Let Me Tell You a Story and any other podcasts I might be working on.
Absolutely. And I will be getting all your details to put in the description box so people can find you and see what you're up to.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you so much for having me, Anna.
If you like the spooky content of this episode today, please hit the subscribe button and you will get a notification when every new episode is released to the public. And stay tuned for many, many more episodes unpacking the strange and unseen aspects of the paranormal world around us. So in episode 46, we're exploring paranormal driving distractions. I've had lots of these, so I can talk about this till the cows come home. We're going to talk about how our bodies can react to these paranormal influences, why driving can be dangerous with supernatural hitchhikers, and where you might expect to find dark entities on the roadway, accident sites, and other locations. So thank you for joining me today. And don't forget, if you want to share a paranormal experience just with myself, or you would like me to share one of your experiences through my podcast, you can do a voice recording, or you can write out your experience and I will read it exactly as you have written. You can email me at spiritualbeing44@gmail.com. And for information on paranormal house clearing, you can visit my website, Spiritual Being. You will find the address in the description box. And I look forward to sharing this spooky space again with you next week. And remember, life is perfectly paranormal.